Well, as you all know, I just got back from a trip to Israel, a wonderful trip, got back in the wee hours Thursday morning. And when last time I came back from a trip to Israel, I shared some images with you, and I thought so many of you have been to Israel, or so many of you have also endured people going through their pictures from their trip. So I wanted this to be a little different. And so what I want to do is share with you some of the images from Israel, but especially share with you some things about the Temple Mount. Now, these are my homies that I traveled with. And yeah, we might need to turn these lights out. And those of you listening on CD, you're really going to have to use your imaginations. But I am going to try to put this PowerPoint presentation on the internet, on our website, so people who can't watch it here might be able to watch it later on. Let me get this blown up a bit more. There we go. So here we have my son Caleb, my nephew Daniel, and of course everybody knows Ben. And we just had a great time. We even liked each other when we came home. So. But I want to talk to you about the Temple Mount. Out of all the things and all the experiences we had, I wanted to focus on something and actually try to teach something that would have some benefit to all of some spiritual significance. And we had the privilege of going up on the Temple Mount. I got to go up there 20 years ago when I first went to Israel. And for many years, it was closed to non-Muslims. But it's now open again. And so we got to go up, and I did some studying ahead of time, and there's a wonderful by Rabbi, I think his first name's Chaim Richman, and I encourage you to watch it. And Chaim goes up, he's an Orthodox Jew who works with the Temple Institute, and he goes up, he does a walk around the Temple Mount and points out many of the things. So some of the things I share with you, I want to make sure I give credit's due. Some of this comes from Rabbi Richman. But as we look at this Temple Mount, there are several significant events that happened here. You have to understand why this is the place of the temple and why this is the unique place that it is. First of all, this Temple Mount is called Mount Moriah in the Bible. And it's at Mount Moriah in Genesis 22, where Abraham took his son Isaac. He bound him. This is called the Akedah, the binding. And God indicated this mountain to Abraham, this particular mountain, that particular spot where you saw that Dome of the Rock sitting. And under that Dome of the Rock, there's a rock. And it was on that rock that Abraham built an altar, and he went to sacrifice his son as God tested him. The next thing that happened is in Genesis 28. This is where Jacob, according to tradition, and there's very, very good source material and a good indication of the scriptures, that this is where Jacob had his dream. He was fleeing from his brother Esau. He's heading to to meet his future bride. He didn't know that, but he was going to go to Laban's home. And while he was there, he was sleeping on this rock, and he had the dream of the sulam, the ladder. And it's interesting, significant what Jacob says. In verses 16 and 17, it says, "Then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, 'Surely Adonai is in this place, and I did not know it.'" And it says, "And he was afraid and said, 'How awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven.'" A third event that happened there, this is Ornan's threshing floor. Ornan was a Jebusite. And this story may not be as well known to you, but it's in 1 Chronicles 21. David was king of Israel. Things are going well, and he decides, "I'm going to take a census." He shouldn't have taken a census. God does not like it when we count things that belong to him. And the people of Israel belong to God, but David counted them as if they belonged to himself. And when he counted them, he realized after the census was over, he had done wrong. And so God said, I'll give you a choice. I can bring a plague. I can send you into exile for a period of time. And then there was a third choice of, I believe it was warfare. I forget the third one right now. But David said, you decide. I know you're a merciful God. You choose what the punishment should be. So God brought a plague in. And while the plague was sweeping through, the prophet told David, it's in 1 Chronicles 21, starting with verse 18, says, now the angel of the Lord had commanded Gad to say to David that David should go up and raise an altar to Adonai on the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite. This threshing floor is the top of Mount Moriah. It's the rock. It's where the temple would later be built. It's the same location. So David went up at Gad's word, which he had spoken in the name of Adonai. Now, Ornan was threshing wheat. Now, do you understand what threshing is? Threshing wheat. It's not harvesting wheat. When you've harvested the wheat, you have all the grain, you have a problem. Each kernel of wheat, which is good for food and good for seed, is covered with a husk that you can't eat. It's worthless. So you can take each one and peel each one at a time, but that'd be pretty monotonous. So what they do, they go to a place where there's a good breeze. And there's usually a very good breeze on the top of Mount Moriah. They want a place where there's stones. There's not a lot of dirt to mix with the wheat. And they'll get the wheat in a pile, and they have these threshing fans or threshing forks. They look kind of like a leaf rake. They stick it in. They throw the wheat up in the air. And the violence of that kind of breaks the husk. The wind blows the husk away, but the wheat is heavy and falls right back down. So they just do this. They just keep throwing up. And every time they throw it up, you see a cloud of the husks, the chaff, just blowing away in the wind. So it's a threshing floor. And then after a while, the husks are all blown away, and they gather the wheat, and it's ready to use. So there's this threshing floor there, and Ornan was threshing wheat at the time. He turned and saw the angel, and the four sons who were with him hid themselves. And as David came to Ornan, Ornan looked and saw David and went out from the threshing floor and paid homage to David with his face to the ground. And David said to Ornan, give me the site of the threshing floor that I may build on it an altar to Adonai. Give to me at its full price that the plague may be averted from the people. Then Ornan said to David, take it and let my lord the king do what seems good to him. See, I give the oxen for burnt offerings and the threshing sledges for the wood and the wheat for a grain offering. I give it all. But King David said to Ornan, no, but I will buy them for the full price. I will not take for Adonai what is yours, nor offer burnt offerings that cost me nothing. So David paid Ornan 600 shekels of gold by weight for the site. And David built there an altar to Adonai and presented burnt offerings and peace offerings and called on Adonai. And the Lord answered him with fire from heaven upon the altar of burnt offering. Then the Lord commanded the angel, and he put his sword back in its sheath. The plague came to an end right there. These three events are very important. Because you see, each of us, this is good, solid Christian theology, Messianic theology, and Jewish theology. Each of us is a tabernacle. Each of us is a temple. We've talked about this many times. But when we begin to consider what the foundation, the chosen foundation for God's temple was, the same foundation will be for the temple that's to come. And you consider the three events that happened here, it teaches us a very important spiritual lesson, three very important spiritual lessons of what about the foundation of God's temple should be in each of our lives. We'll come back to this towards the end. But there are some other events that took place. David wanted to build a temple for God, but God says, nope, your son will build it. David's son, Solomon, became the next king of Israel. And it says in 2 Chronicles 3:1, then Solomon began to build the house of Adonai in Jerusalem on Mount Moriah, where he had appeared to his father David, at the place that David had prepared on the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite. Okay, so this ties it all together. Now, here's an image. Now, the rock at the top, don't think of it as sitting on top of the building. What we're doing, we're going chronologically from the past at the top and we're going through time. As we move through time, we're going to be moving down. Now, at the top, you see the threshing floor, just this big rock. I'll show you a photograph of this a little bit later on. It's just a rock. One of the Jewish legends is that it was that from this rock at the pinnacle of Mount Moriah that God, from this one rock, created the entire world. That this rock is the very center of the planet, the very center of the world. It's a wonderful tradition. And spiritually speaking, in many ways, that's the truth. But on this rock, Solomon built his temple, and there you see a picture of it. It was a pretty grand structure for its day. And you can see the altar out in front right here, and there's the laver for washing. And there were probably some more outbuildings around, but here's the rock, and on top of that rock, Solomon's temple's built, and the Holy of Holies in the temple was directly on top of that rock. The Ark of the Covenant sat on that rock, the threshing floor of Ornon, the place where Jacob had his dream of the ladder, the place where Abraham went to sacrifice Isaac. But as you know, because of idolatry, the Israelites were driven into exile, and the temple of Solomon fell into disrepair. And for 70 years, they were in exile. Then in the 70 years, they came back, they did some repairs. But later on, Herod the Great decided he was going to build a better temple. So he expanded the platform out around the rock, and he built a much grander edifice. It was dedicated in 10 BC, and then the Romans destroyed it in 70 AD, so it had a very short life. Solomon's temple stood for 410 years. Herod's temple, the Herod that Yeshua walked in and taught in the courtyard of, only stood for 80 years. Now, again, whoops, I'm sorry. Let me back that up. At the top, we see the threshing floor, and then Solomon's temple is built on top of that. But now look at Herod's temple. How much grander that is. Here's a better detail. Let me point out a few features of this, and if you're in the back and you want to see a little better, please go right ahead and move up. Nobody's going to mind if you do. And if I'm blocking somebody's view over here, just move on over. Here's the temple structure built right over the foundations where Solomon's temple was. The Holy of Holies, again, in this back section, sitting right on top of that rock, Ornon's threshing floor. You've got the altar right there. You can't see the laver from this view. Here's the courtyard of the women. And I want you to pay attention. There are steps here. There are 15 steps right there leading from this level up to this level. And as the priest would ascend these steps, they would sing. And they would sing the 15 songs of ascent. And they're found, I think they're Psalms 120 through 134, if I have the numbers correct. Now, around this is the soreg. It's a fence that was to keep the Gentiles out. And over the openings, each of these openings here, there was a sign that said, basically, if you're a Gentile, an uncircumcised Gentile, you come in here, you come in at the risk of your own life. They've even found one of these signs, and it's in the museum in Jerusalem. And it was written in Hebrew and in Greek and in Latin. Now back here, see this building? This is a building that was dedicated to Mark Antony, the Roman leader. And this is called the Antonia Fortress. This is not part of the temple, though it's built right next to the temple, attached to the temple, and Roman soldiers could walk around the top, which really, really aggravated the Jewish people. This is the building to which Yeshua was taken and where he was beaten. The crown of thorns was put on his head. And right now, though, on the foundations of the Antonia Fortress, there's a Muslim school. And we got to go into that school. We were taken up to the top floor, and we took some photographs of the Temple Mount from a window right up about there. Again, we weren't in the Antonia Fortress. This doesn't stand anymore. But on its foundations, there's a Muslim school. What you know is the Wailing Wall or the Western Wall is this little tiny section over here. It's not part of the temple. It's part of the retaining wall upon which the temple was built. Now, I was trying to describe to someone how big the Temple Mount is. And just last week, I was telling somebody, I said, I don't know the exact dimensions, but I bet you could put a dozen football fields on top of there. I was wrong. You can put 36 football fields on top of there. This is over 37 acres. It is the largest man-made structure of its kind, the largest man-made platform, all built around the rock that is covered by the temple in the Holy of Holies. These are all stone cobblestones or cut stones that cover this entire place. 37 acres, about 36 football fields of area. It was quite a structure. When you see photographs of this part of the wall, the Wailing Wall, you're only looking at 1/8 of the length of the retaining wall. Many of the pictures you see are of the Eastern Gate, which is right about there. It was not part of the original structure, but you'll see some pictures later on. And if you look at pictures of the wall today, it's not as tall as it is here. Because when the Romans destroyed the temple, they took all the stones of the building, all the stones of the surrounding structures, including these large buildings here where the Sanhedrin met, and they threw them over the side. There are some stones over on this side you can still lay on the ground. They still have the burn marks on them. They're blackened stones from the temple. Many of them are thrown over this side, but most of them thrown over this side. So now the ground is much higher here because of the debris from the temple being destroyed and thrown over the wall. Now, we're going to be taking a tour of this and a few videos and some photographs. So let me show you where we're going to be going. When you go to the Temple Mount, you come up a ramp on this side, and you walk along this way. At least this is where we're going to walk. And then we're going to go up this way, and then we're going to go over to the Eastern Gate, come back, and we're going to walk up new steps that are located where these were. And then we're going to see what is there now. So, this is the Western Wall, part of the retaining wall. Up on top of that is where the temple would have been. And so why is this a place where the Jews love to go and pray? Because this is as close as they can get to the original Holy of Holies. This is as close as they can get. The Holy of Holies would have been up here somewhere in the temple. But they can go to this wall, and most Orthodox Jews will not go up the ramp onto the Temple Mount. They're afraid they'll step on some part of what used to be the temple itself. But more are starting to go up. We saw a couple up there when we went up. But they're careful to walk around the very outside edge where they know it's safe. There's no chance they'll be stepping on any part of the original Holy of Holies and the original temple area. Because only priests could go into the original temple area. If I back up a quick second, this area in here, only the priest could go into here. The commoner could go up the steps, and there was a section right in here where he could stand, but there's another step up. He could not go there. Only the priest were allowed to go here. So the Jews are afraid of stepping on any of this area in here. There's another close-up of the wall. You can get an idea of how tall this is. And when it's raining, you want to pray, you can go in the tunnel and the wall continues and you can still pray at the wall and stay out of the rain. Now, none of us are videographers, as you'll soon see, but Daniel did a pretty good job. So we're going to show a little bit of video action here. And there is the wooden ramp that's built to get you up to the Temple Mount now. Now over here is where the women go to pray. There's a fence there to divide, and the men pray on the left side, the women will pray on the right. Somebody, this thing's a little, there we go. I think it's very clever how Daniel started with the flag and he panned down. I mean, that's good stuff. That's really good. Here we are a little closer to the wall. You can see the ramp. Now, if you ever wonder what's on the other side, you always have pictures looking at the wall. Here's what's behind you when you're looking at the wall. You know, I think we decided after tromping around Jerusalem for 3 or 4 days that no matter where you go in the city, it's always uphill. Always. There's no downhill in Jerusalem at all. Everything's uphill. No matter where you're at, no matter what direction you go, it's uphill constantly. Now, Jeremiah prophesied about the second temple, and he prophesied its destruction. And in Jeremiah 26:18, he said, Zion will be plowed as a field, and Jerusalem will become ruins, and the mountain of the house as the high places of a forest. Now, that's a really strange prophecy when you consider this is one of the most massive and beautiful ornate buildings in the world. How in the world, why in the world would you ever plow that? Why? What's going on? And then Yeshua also prophesied in Matthew 24, verses 1 and 2. Yeshua came out from the temple and was going away when his disciples came up to point out the temple buildings to him. He said to them, do you not see all these things? Truly I say to you, not one stone here will be left one upon another, which will not be torn down. And then about 40 years later, that prophecy was fulfilled. Why? Why was it all torn down? Well, the roof of the temple was gold-plated. There was a lot of gold used all through the temple. And there were 6,000 Jews who ran into the temple precincts upon the Temple Mount and then into the temple courtyard to escape the Romans who were closing in. And finally, somehow, accidentally, a fire started. Now, the Romans had been given orders to preserve the building because this was an incredible building. They wanted to use the building to worship their own gods in. But a fire somehow started, and the wood beams and the wood structure and the cedar and everything inside the walls caught fire. The temple burned. All 6,000 Jews were killed. And the gold, which has a very low melting point, it melted, and it ran down the walls and in the stones and the cracks and down to the ground. So, to get the gold, the Romans disassembled the temple block by block, threw it over the wall, got the bits of gold as they went. Once the temple's gone, they plowed the ground to get up every last bit of gold they could find to fulfill the prophecy. Here's the picture taken from the site of where the Antonia Fortress once stood. This is looking down on the Temple Mount. Now, the Dome of the Rock there, it's hard to get perspective when you're looking at things that are really big. And it doesn't look like that huge of a building. But if you were to take that and put it one wall on the goal line of a football field, it would cover more than half of a football field. A football field is 150 feet from the goal line to the 50-yard line. This thing is 157 feet. It would go 7 feet beyond the 50-yard mark and overlap 7 feet on the side. So this building is half the size of a football field. And you notice all the trees? That's a fulfillment of Jeremiah's prophecy. It's like a forest. In fact, up here, this is actually an orchard that's been planted besides all the other trees. Jeremiah's prophecy, you're seeing the fulfillment of it right here. So this is what the Temple Mount looked like after the destruction of the temple. Then around 691, the Muslims built the Dome of the Rock. So this building here is about 1,500 years old. It's old. And it is built right on top of the threshing floor of Ornan. And see this little dome here, this little building? It's called the Dome of the Chain. It's a long story about why it's called that. I'm not even going to get into it. But that's built right on top of the place where the altar stood. Down here is the El Aqsa Mosque. And it is standing still. And now you can see this new gate put in, the Eastern Gate, which was not there originally. Now see this area here? This is part of the front of the old temple, of Herod's temple. Of course, now this is all covered with stone, but this is the way it would have looked back after the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Dome of the Rock were built. You know, 691, I think, for the Dome of the Rock, and I think around 720, 750, the Al-Aqsa Mosque was constructed. Here's an inside look at the Dome of the Rock, and there you can see the threshing floor. You see the rock itself. Here's a photograph looking straight down. That's the rock that Abraham bound Isaac, took him to sacrifice him. This is the rock where Jacob had his dream. This is the rock where David built the altar to stop the plague. This is the place, the location on Mount Moriah that God chose for the building of his temple. It used to be years ago that non-Muslims could go into the dome. 20 years ago, I got to go in, but no photography is allowed. So this is about the only photograph I know in existence of the actual rock. All right, it's time to take a break. After all this touring, we need to take a break. Now, those are real bagels there. Those are real bagels. There's a real falafel. That's what a real one looks like. There's a real falafel eater right there. I tell you. Okay. Well, let's continue our tour. Here you can see the wooden ramp, and we're back far enough and high enough where you can see the Al-Aqsa Mosque at the southern end. This is the south. On the other side of the dome of the Temple Mount is the Mount of Olives. This is the western wall, and of course, north is on to the left. So, here's a little bit trying to capture what it feels like to walk up to the Temple Mount. Now, as you go up, you'll notice as we make the curve, you're going to see a bunch of riot shields, because sometimes there are some problems on top of the mount or people coming up. And so here's where they store their riot shields. And if you look over on the right, you can't see it from here, but if you were to go up this and look at the right, you see rubble from the temple there with the burn marks still on the pieces of stone. See all those plastic shields? And when you look at them, you can tell they've been used. When you step up on the Temple Mount, there's a building directly to the right as you go through the wall. I don't think it's shown here, but that's a museum, a Muslim museum. And directly in front over here is the side, the western side of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And up behind those trees is the Dome of the Rock. Oh, he must have finished his falafel. All right. That guy's eating too many falafels there, I think. This is the front entrance to the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And I'm going to point out an area to you real quickly as it pans to the left. This is looking due south, and it's a pretty enormous building. I think it is one of the biggest mosques in the world. And that's the Mount of Olives back up there in the background. There you can see the Dome of the Rock. And that is a gold dome. The gold was just replaced about 18, 20 years ago. I was going to point out something to you, but the video's over. Just to the right of the Dome of the Rock, there's a monument. This is it. It's part of a pillar. And this pillar was dedicated to one of the terrorists. There's Mina back there. Mina, can you read the Arabic on top of there? Can you see that? Would you please? I was hoping you'd be here this morning. Mina, if you don't know, is from Egypt, from Alexandria, Egypt. He's going to school here, and there's got to be a... We're not letting him go back, by the way. I hope you know that. That was a one-way trip you took to come to Ohio.
One person says, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It says, in the name of God, the merciful one.
In the name of God, the merciful one.
Yeah.
who killed a person out of injustice. He can't skip death.
He can't escape it.
Okay. Escape death.
And then the last word is the same word that you got that on the left, which I don't know what it means.
That line, I think, that you had trouble reading because it's, I don't know, it's a fancy font or whatever. According to my sources, it's actually calling, what this is in reference to is to Israel, calling for the death of Israel and the destruction of Israel. So it's, anyways, to think that that's on the Temple Mount. Thank you, Mina. I appreciate that. This is looking due north. You can see the Dome of the Rock, and see there's the Dome of the Chain. And that is built right over where the altar once stood. Now here we are walking north, along the eastern wall. The Mount of Olives is directly to the right, but just to give you a little feel what it's like to walk along up here. And a good bit of this rubble you see on the left, if this is going to let me, here we go. A lot of this rubble that you see on the left, if you look closely at it, you can see that these are actually Herodian stones going back to Herod's temple. You can recognize Herodian stones because Herod had this little motif. When he built a building or built a wall, and at the western wall you see this, each stone, he had a frame made into the stone. So each stone has its own outline. It was a very, it was like his signature on a building. When each of the stones had these frames, it makes it for a beautiful wall. But you'll see some of those stones that date back to the original temple in the rubble that's off to the left. Now, on the outside of this wall, we were walking from left to right, going north on the other side of this wall. I want to point out this eastern gate. And you've probably all heard about this, the eastern gate. It's called the Mercy Gate. It's called the Golden Gate. You'll notice it's all bricked up. And there are graves all in front of it. The Muslims had this bricked up later on because they learned of the prophecy that the Messiah would land on the Mount of Olives, which is right out where you all are sitting right now. And when he lands on the Mount of Olives, he would enter the temple. Well, this is the only gate on the eastern side of the temple complex. So to keep him from coming in, they bricked it up. And then to make it an unclean place, because an unclean person cannot enter the temple area, they buried people in the graves there in front of the wall. Here's the other side of that wall. And what you see on the left is actually the inside part of the Golden Gate, the Eastern Gate. So this will give you a little bit of an idea of what this looks like. It protrudes into the Temple Mount. But you can see it's also walled up here on the inside. But see the sign up here? We're going to point out that sign. Look, take a close-up of that in just a moment. And down at the bottom, you see there's a door. Okay? There's an office inside the gate. And it's the office of the Jerusalem Central Committee of Zakah. You know what this committee does? This is the committee that pays out money to the families of suicide bombers. Their office is located on the other side of the Eastern Gate. And you know where they bury the bodies of the suicide bombers, at least what's left of them? Right on the other side of the wall in front of the gate. You know, it's an amazing thing. Up here on the Temple Mount, this is the one place in the Bible we're commanded to go and pray. Yet it's the only place in the world that we are forbidden to pray. If you're a Muslim, you can go in there and pray all you want. If you're a Jew, if you are a Christian, they will not let you pray up there because they have policemen up there watching. the two Jewish men we saw that they finally got through, they had two policemen with them in uniform walking with them to make sure they did not pray on the Temple Mount. It's absolutely forbidden. Remember the steps, the Songs of Ascents, the 15 steps going up? They would have been right where the location of these newer steps are. There you see the dome where the temple stood. There's the dome with the chain where the altar stood. Now, as a Gentile, I would not be allowed to even be in this area, much less walk up these steps. And if I was a Jew and not a priest, I would not be allowed to go up past the top step where we're going up. Okay, here we go. So it's pretty amazing to think that we can walk in places that Yeshua himself would not have been allowed to go because he was not a Levite. So here we are at the top of the steps. That dome, that gray one, is built right over where the altar once stood. The dome of the rock, the gold dome, was built right over where the Holy of Holies once stood. Now, why there's this white wall around here, I don't know if they're doing repairs or whatnot. That was not there before. It looks temporary. Okay, we're going to walk around to this front entrance. This is the south entrance. Did you know that in the early days of Islam, Muslims prayed toward Jerusalem? But later on, when all the anti-Semitism arose, they changed and they all prayed towards Mecca now. And so the main entrance to the Dome of the Rock is on the south side facing Mecca. And here is the southern entrance, the main entrance. Now here's another picture of the main entrance. I want you to notice something. Right here is an inset. I think it's marble. Inset into the wall, and there's another one on the other side. And if you ever do woodwork, veneer work, you do what's called book matching, where you'll take thin wood, you'll split down the middle, and you open it up like a book, so the pattern of one matches the pattern of the other. That's what's been done here with these stones. Now, in Islam, you are never allowed to do art that depicts a face. This is why they do very geometric artwork. They do artwork using the Arabic script, and it's very beautiful. But nowhere ever in Islamic art are you allowed to depict an animal or a human face. But I want you to take a close look at this stone right here. Let's take a close-up of that. You tell me if you don't see a face right there with horns and really gnarly teeth. And let's look at the one on the left side. Sometimes, I remember seeing these 20 years ago, and these are the only two. I think maybe this is what Allah looks like. But how in the world, whoever built this 1,400 years ago, could build this and not see what they were building is beyond me. Well, here we are on the western side. We've walked around. And we're on the west side going down. You do not go out of the Temple Mount the same way you came in. You go out a different way. And what we use as an exit is what most Muslims use as an entrance. They have guards there, and if you're Muslim, you're allowed to go right on up, no problem. If you're not Muslim, you have to go around to the wooden ramp, go through a checkpoint. They check your bags and everything else, and check you out to make sure that you're safe to go up. Right behind where I took that last picture, in this wall, is where the King of Jordan is buried. He's the one who contributed the gold for the dome when they re-gilted the dome. And so he's buried in the wall there on the Temple Mount. So here we have a very common shot. And now hopefully you can kind of orient yourselves. You have the ramp going up. Here's the western wall that you normally see in the pictures. And sitting above that is the Dome of the Rock, and over across the way is the Mount of Olives. Now, we're going to jump way north. There's a town, one of my favorite places in Israel, called Safat, and it's just north and west of the Sea of Galilee. And when we're visiting up there, I love going to this one synagogue. It's very small, very ornate. It's called the Ahuva Synagogue. And it's been featured in a number of stories and novels. It has a lot of history to it. But you see up here in the dome, you see what's inside on the wall? See that up there? Here's a close-up. It's the Dome of the Rock inside of a synagogue. And underneath, the words say, Makom Beit HaMikdash, the place of the house, of the temple. Beit Mikdash means the holy place, the holy house, the sanctuary. And so even the synagogue, they put the Dome of the Rock there, which is a Muslim thing. It seems kind of weird when you first see it. But there's something going on here. They realize that this is simply a place marker that is there until the temple will be rebuilt. So here's the question. Here's the question I have to ask myself. Why does God allow that thing to be there, that Dome of the Rock? And there's only one answer. It's to prevent the rebuilding of the temple until the right time. God has put that there to prevent the rebuilding of the temple until the right time. And here's something else to remember. Why was Herod's temple destroyed? The Talmud tells us it was destroyed due to sinat chinam, hatred without a cause. Who did they hate without a cause? One candidate, Yeshua. And Yeshua himself says, they have hated me without a cause. There was no reason to hate this man. He was the Torah in flesh. And they hated him. So what has God done? You see, Yeshua knew that whatever they did to him would happen to the temple. If you accept me, your temple stands. You reject me and destroy my body, your temple gets destroyed. This is why he wept over the temple and wept over Jerusalem as he rode into it that last week of his life. He says, I long to gather you under my wings like a hen will gather her chicks, but you would not have any, you wouldn't do it. And he knew they were going to destroy him and kill him. And he knew that that would require the destruction of the temple. Since they hated him without a cause, what did God do? He placed here a dome, a building that was built by a religion that is based upon sinat chinam, hatred without a cause. The very essence and foundation of Islam is hatred without a cause. That's why it's a religion of death. Now, I'm not saying Muslims are bad people. Most of the Muslims I know are very, very, very good people. But the very tenets of what their Quran teaches is hatred, 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 hatred. Destruction and death to the infidel, to anyone who is not a Muslim. Yeshua was hated without a cause. Their temple's destroyed. So God said, I'm going to put a religion right here who's founded upon hatred without a cause. And that's what's there now. At the beginning, I said that there were three things that happened here, and these are spiritual lessons for us. The first one being the binding of Isaac, the Akedah. When you look at that event, there are many ways to look at it, but there's one thing above all that stands out, and that is submission, laying down one's life. Isaac allowed himself to be bound in obedience and submission to his father, Abraham. Abraham bound his son in submission and obedience to God. The picture here, entirely from beginning to end, is one of loving obedience and submission, even at the cost of my life. You see, that's what the principle of the cross is. Giving all of yourself, holding nothing back, and loving submission to the one over you. That has to be the first foundation for God being in your life, for you being a temple of God. Remember the second event? Jacob's dream of a ladder. God had made some wonderful promises to Jacob. And Jacob awakens with a heightened awareness that God's in this place and I didn't know it. How awesome is this place? It is the very house of God. This is what your life should be like. You know, most of us just live our mundane existences. We clock in at work. We get back home. We put gas in the car. We pay the bills. We eat. We sleep. We get up and go to work again, do it all over again. But if we immerse ourselves in the Word has something to tell you about your life, about your very body. And this is what it says to you, to each one of you. How awesome is each of your existences, each of your souls, your bodies, the time once you live, the circumstances once you live. How awesome. God is here and you don't even know it. This is the very house of God. How awesome is this place? We should be savoring every moment of our lives. And even the mundane things in our lives, see through the normalcy and the routine and realize this is a holy existence. And you should imbue every moment of your life with holiness and elevate it to something special. And realize if you're clocking into work and you're going to work at your machine or work at the checkout line or work at the desk, whatever it is, that is saturated with holiness, if you'll just open your eyes to see it. And every encounter with every person is God's message to you or allowing you to be a message to them. It's just you being light. Do you ever think about a candle? I mean, if a candle had awareness, it's there and it's burning, you think, I'm bored. I never go anywhere. I just sit, just bored. This burns me up, you know? But the candle's completely unaware of the people benefiting from that light. You know what I'm saying? The third thing that happened on this place, it was a threshing floor. It's a place of separating the external from the internal. The worthless from the valuable. The dead from the living seed. It's this place where you separate the deadness and rottenness of religion from the truth of spirituality and life and intimacy with God. If we practice these three things, loving submission to our God, a realization that every day of life is a holy gift from Him, and we reject the dead, we allow ourselves to be thrown up in the air, and a lot of the times we're just up and down and up and down in our lives, what's this all about? Everything's up and down. God's threshing you. He's letting the chaff get blown away because it's worthless, it's dead, it's external, it has no worth whatsoever, it's good for nothing. He keeps letting the wheat continue to fall and purify it. Because the wheat is a powerful thing. You can eat the wheat to give you life. You can plant the wheat to grow more wheat. It's filled with life, filled with power, but not until it's separated from the husk. These things that happened here on this rock are a picture of what should be the foundation for us being temples of God. You see the lesson here? It's a powerful lesson. And you know, your life might kind of look like this. It doesn't have to, and this isn't always going to be this way. One day, those trees are going to be cleared because you're not allowed to have trees near the temple of God. And God's temple is going to sit right there. And it'll not be a place of hatred without a cause. It's going to be a place of love without a cause. And now, in Hebrew, that without a cause, that word kinam is where we get the word chin, grace. In other words, they hated me graciously. What's grace? Undeserved favor. Well, hatred without a cause is undeserved hatred. They just lavished hatred on me for no reason. God lavishes love upon us, though we don't deserve it. So there, next time, I hope that when you see a picture of the Western Wall and this setup, you have more of a context for what's going on. But I want to show you one more wall. Oh, after we have a little nap. All right. Here's one more wall. And then I have one more slide after this. This is in Bethlehem. And you probably hear a lot about the wall that separates Israel from the West Bank. Bethlehem is now part of the West Bank. It's under Palestinian control. And when I went to Israel 20 years ago, this wall wasn't there. When I went back again 5 years ago, you saw some bits of wall being built. You could still just drive into Bethlehem and drive out. And then last time, and this time I was in Israel, you can't even drive in your own car. You must be taken in by a taxi that has permits to go through the checkpoints. And they stop you, they check you, they check your passports when you go in, they check your passports when you come out. It's like going into another country. And this is the wall that separates the two. But just down a little bit to the right, I took this picture. Now, I don't know if somebody's been reading Rob Bell's newest book, but the message here, love wins, is true. The conditions that are in Israel now are based upon hatred. Hatred of Palestinians for Jews, Jews for Palestinians, some Jews for other Jews, the Orthodox, the religious for the non-religious for the religious, Jewish hatred of Messiah, Jewish hatred. There's a lot of hating going on. Yet God's preserving it. God has a plan. And love will win. Love is when I don't do what's in my best interest so much as I do what's in your best interest. So loving submission to God and to one another. There's a day coming when the inhabitants of Israel, the citizens of Israel, will love God with all their heart, with all their soul, with all their strength, and they will love their neighbors themselves. When that happens, that's when 10 men from the nations take hold of the tzitzit, the corners of the robe of a Jew, and say, let us go with you, for we heard that Adonai is with you, the Lord is with you. And Torah once again will go forth from Zion. That's going to be something, but it has to start from the inside out. So, well, anyways, I hope this has been somewhat meaningful, not too boring. And I didn't want to be a typical show and tell from Israel, but I'm often asked questions about the temple site, about the Temple Mount and how things are oriented in the history. So maybe now you have a little bit better idea in your mind of how things are set there, but also the spiritual things that lie behind what's going on historically here. Yes, question. No. Yeah, do the Muslims come near the Wailing Wall? No. It has no significance to them whatsoever. They don't go down there at all. Not a bit. Unless they're working just to sweep up the ground. They might be sweeping the floor. Only if they're hired to do something, but they have no interest in that. What's amazing is, yeah, you do feel the friction. But by the same token, you also sense that there's a cooperation. And it might be hard to realize, but you see Jews and Christians and Muslims working side by side, not just tolerating each other, but actually cooperating with each other. But when you get an extremist, and I don't care whether he's a Christian or a Muslim or a Jew, an extremist doesn't operate on love. All right? An extremist always is the one who causes the division and the problems. So, when we came back from Bethlehem, we had a Palestinian taxi driver, Abdullah. Great guy. He's a father. He got a little six-year-old son. And he really started opening up to us on the trip from Bethlehem back to Jerusalem. And we just wanted his perspective. We didn't argue with him, didn't challenge him on anything. We just wanted to know, what's your perspective on things? And he began to share from a Palestinian perspective. And you could see his frustration. It's a real frustration he has with Israel. And there's not a hatred of Jews. He says, they're our brothers. But there's a hatred for the government, hatred for the power, hatred for the wall, hatred for the army. But Abdullah absolutely could not see that this wall was built for one reason only. There were terrorists coming across, bombing people and killing people in Jerusalem and throughout Israel. So they put a wall up so they can't come through so easily. He couldn't see that it was the fanatics in his own faith are the ones who caused that wall to be built. He couldn't see that. It was just a really interesting thing, but I really liked Abdullah. He's a good man, a good man. And we prayed. He says, well, I just did a blessing over him that his six-year-old son would live to see a time when Israel's at peace and that wall's gone. And I really do pray that that happens. Yep. Yes, Joe.
Do Muslims still pray 3 times a day?
5 times a day.
5 times a day?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I was asking Abdullah about that. They pray 5 times a day. They pray about an hour, hour and a half before sunrise.
Is it real loud about it?
Pardon me?
Are they loud when they pray?
Oh, yeah. Well, you have these minarets everywhere with these big loudspeakers, and you know, there's la going out, you know. And yeah, it's really irritating an hour and a half before sunrise when that happens. But they pray about an hour, hour and a half before sunrise. They pray at sunrise. They pray at noon. They pray at sundown. Then about an hour, hour and a half after sundown, 5 times a day. Torah suggests 3 times a day. So, but in the New Testament, we're to pray 1 time a day, all day, without ceasing. So, yes, Jim. Is there a prophecy about how that dome gets destroyed or moved out of the way? If there is, I'm not aware exactly what it is, but I do know that in the Quran, it says that if a mosque, place of worship, is destroyed by an act of Allah, like a big meteorite or an earthquake, it is not to be rebuilt. It is no longer a holy site. Now, the El Aqsa Mosque at the south end of the mount, it's been damaged by earthquakes a number of times. But the thing is, it's a very solid structure, whereas the Dome of the Rock is a very fragile structure, but the Dome of the Rock has not been damaged by earthquakes. It's really weird. But it wouldn't take much of an earthquake for that whole thing to come collapsing down. It's very top-heavy. Again, it was built in like 691. How much did they know about building these things back then? So if an earthquake were to come and destroy that Dome of the Rock, it would not be allowed to be rebuilt. So... Yes, in the Quran, they refer to Allah. So, but I'm saying, yes, an act of God, right. Yeah. See, what we would see as an act of God, they call an act of Allah, so we can't rebuild it. Yeah. Okay, now we're going over. I'm happy to stay and answer questions along. In fact, we can stay another hour. There's no Oneg today, is there? Yeah. Joe. Well, this is, Joe asked, did the Muslims build on the Temple Mount for a particular reason? This is a very strange thing. Jerusalem is nowhere mentioned in the Quran. Nowhere. It isn't there. And yet they call the Dome of the Rock their third most holy site. They were never very interested in the Dome of the Rock. And in fact, you don't normally see very many Muslims up there at all anyway. Most of the people you saw there were tourists. So why did they build there? The only thing come up with is God wanted them to, because he wanted a place marker as if as a barrier. The temple's not to be built yet. You know, we went to the Temple Institute in Jerusalem, and there we saw the altar of incense. We saw the ephod, the clothing of the high priest. We saw the golden plate the high priest will wear that says, Kadosh L'Adonai, holy to the Lord. We saw the vessels for collecting the blood from the sacrifices on Yom Kippur. We saw the trumpets. We saw the harps. We saw the incense. We saw the containers for doing the wine libations. We saw the meat hooks to use for putting the meat on the sacrifices and taking it on the altar and taking it off. We saw the incense burners to be used on Yom Kippur. We saw it. It's all there. It's all done. Just all they need is a building to start using it in. So the only reason they're not building a temple now is because the Dome of the Rock is still there. Yes, ma'am.
Don't Muslims believe that that's where Abraham wanted to sacrifice?
Yes. Yes, there's so a legend. Yes, they don't believe that Abraham went to sacrifice Isaac. They say Abraham went to sacrifice Ishmael. Ishmael's the chosen son, because they're descendants from Ishmael. And there's a legend that Muhammad ascended from that spot on the Temple Mount, and he had a vision of heaven. No. Maybe a day will come that you will be allowed to. But yes, it takes you up to the southwestern corner of the Temple Mount. Mm-hmm. It's been there as long. It was there 20 years ago. That's how he went up 20 years ago to visit. So it's been there a long time. Yeah, the wooden walkway, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Just FYI, we could do a different platform. They're overwhelmed in the nursery and children's ministry. We have so many kids right now.
Okay.
So just whatever you want to do.
what I'm going to do, we're going to close right now. If you have more questions, and I can show you some pictures and the graphics I used, and you can come up here. I'll stick around as long as you want and try to answer questions as best I can. So let's close in prayer. Father, thank you so much for this time. And I thank you, Lord, that you are so active in human history, especially we see it in the history of Israel. So, Father, I pray that, Lord, may Messiah come soon. And may your temple quickly be rebuilt, that we may go there to pray and to worship the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Lord, we thank you for your faithfulness in fulfilling prophecy. You're so reliable, and you know all things from the beginning to the end. So we trust you. How could we not? So we thank you for this time together. Ask you to bless each one here over the remainder of this holy Shabbat. Give each one good rest, good fellowship with one another, and especially with you. And we commit this day to you in the precious name of Yeshua HaMashiach. Amen.